the back of the RBA lifting their cash rate by 0.5%, we catch up with Andrew Date from Industry Insider, who's a buyer's advocate, to take a look at what's happening in the local property market. Enjoy.
Everything we talk about on today's podcast is general advice only because we don't know your individual personal situation. Before you act on anything we've spoken about, you should chat to your financial advisor, and if you don't have one, feel free to reach out to us. Now, on to today's show.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Wealth Collective podcast. I'm Zach Masters, and today I'm joined by Andrew Date from Industry Insider, who is a buyer's advocate. And with everything going on in the property market at the moment, I thought it'd be a great time to get him on. Welcome, Andrew.
Good morning, Zach. Great to be here. Yes. I think this is the third time now, so it's great to be involved with the listeners, and it's good to see you this morning.
Yeah, very good to have you here in person. I think it's our first one face-to-face, not over Zoom, so the sound quality will be a little bit better. For the listeners out there that aren't sure what a buyer's advocate does, run us through what it is that you actually do.
Yeah, so buyer's advocate, or sometimes known as a buyer's agent in the Sydney market, we specifically help the buyer make smarter decisions. So we'll help them do the research, the due diligence, the negotiation, the inspecting of the properties. We've got a couple of different services, but our most common service is where we hold our client's hand from the very beginning right through to the end. So the real estate sales agents and the auctioneers, they represent the seller. As a buyer's advocate or a buyer's agent, we independently represent the buyer and the buyer only.
Yeah. And give us a little background on your personal experience.
Yes, I started in residential real estate in 2011 with a franchise group down on the peninsula, and worked for that company for 2 years. After I've kind of hit a ceiling on my growth there, I went across the road and worked at another company which had a bit more of a marketing and branding aspect to their business, but it was also a real estate sales agency. I became an auctioneer and a sales manager, and then subsequently 2015 moved from my comfort zone down Bayside into the city, the big smoke, worked for a buyer and vendor advocate for a short period of time before I had the courage and confidence to go out on my own and start Industry Insider.
Yeah, very good. And a few people might have seen you on the block last year purchasing one of the properties.
Yeah, that was exciting. One of our clients was very happy with the outcome. The budget they provided us compared to what we picked it up for was substantially well under, so that was a good result. Ronnie and George's house won at Bronte Court, number 2 Bronte Court in Hampton. We paid $3,696. It was just on over 500 square metres, 4 bedrooms, a study, swimming pool, 2 living areas, brand new. It had a theatre downstairs as well, double garage. And
House on the block.
Best house on the block. Well, let's...
And you got it for the best price.
If you go off the couples that were in the competition, they certainly had it up there with the most skills in terms of renovating and experience. So, yeah, we brought very well.
Yeah, very, very good. So, obviously, at the moment, there's a bit happening in the world. So, one of the common questions that I'm getting asked as a financial advisor is, you know, well, is now the right time to buy? What's happening with the property market? So that's why we thought it'd be a good idea to get you in. So what is happening in the property market at the moment?
Yeah, it's a great question. And buyers are very, very cautious at the moment. And also sellers. Sellers are a bit hesitant because they're reading all of the clickbait media and they're scared to put their property on the market, thinking that there's not that many buyers out there and they're going to be taking a hit on their sale price. So yeah, confidence has been lost a little. And that's due to a number of factors. Probably the main factor at the moment is the cost of money increasing through interest rates. I follow the American and the New Zealand market quite closely, and the cost of money has increased in those countries. And I did notice that the Commonwealth Bank, I think they increased their rate by like 4%. Fixed rate, which is a big, big jump when you think about... during COVID, we were looking at 2%. Some people were getting 1.99% on fixed rates.
Well, I heard a broker the other day, and they were saying that clients were fixing at like 5.5% now, like locking it in because they just wanted certainty. So if that shows you that people are getting nervous, then...
Yeah, well, I'm not sure I'd go with fixed rate at the moment, but it depends. You've got to get strategic advice from a mortgage broker who understands property investment and is in the market day to day, because the lending rules are changing, and we're seeing people's borrowing capacity start to decrease as interest rates rise.
Yeah. So what's happening more locally around Australia and probably Victoria is where a lot of our listeners are from. So what's happening here?
Yeah, so we're coming off a bit of a low base. There's not a lot of quality homes available to choose from. So that's somewhat holding the market up at the moment, although we have seen declines in Sydney in May of 1.5% and in June more recently at 1% in May decline and 1.5% in June in Sydney, and Melbourne 0.7% in May and a 1% decline in June. So yeah, there's certainly a bit of hesitancy and it's going to be interesting times ahead.
Yeah, and what do you see happening when we're looking ahead? So obviously you're mentioning that buyers are fearful, sellers are fearful at the moment. Is there just not much activity happening, or what can you see moving forward?
Yeah, I've been in the property market for now 12 years. So I've seen three cycles in 12 years. The cycles are happening a lot quicker than what they used to. They used to run for a longer period of time, but they're happening substantially quicker. So what we will see now is we'll see houses take longer to sell. So one of the metrics that will follow is days on market. So in a hot rising seller's market, which we've seen the last couple of years during COVID, agents were taking most of their properties to auction and you weren't able to buy them before auction. You had to be there on auction day and the clearance rates were really high. Now, the days on market is going to be blowing out because the correlation between when a property is first listed for sale with the advertised price compared to what it actually sells for, there's going to be vendor discounts and the agents are going to take longer to sell and they'll be a lot more open to selling before auction.
Yeah, and are sellers being unrealistic in the terms of their expectations as well, or are they just thinking that it's, obviously it's always as a seller you want the best price possible?
Sellers always think their home is worth more than what the market will be prepared to pay most of the time, from my experience. So, I mean, it just depends on the vendor, right? If you've got a house that sold for $2 million in November, which was the peak of the market, and your house is almost identical in the same street, but you're coming to the market in July 2022, that house that sold for $2 million, it's not guaranteed that you're going to be achieving that $2 million price point. So you might need a quote range of 1.8 to 1.9. And if you can get above 1.9, you should be taking that money and running, because in another 6 or 12 months, I think that 1.9 could possibly be 1.8.
Yeah. And I think like you hear a lot of stories about when Australians are able to go see a mortgage broker, or they go see their bank and try to get a loan, and you can get, you know, loan for $900,000. They go and purchase a property with a loan of $900,000, giving themselves very little breathing room. I think that's going to show in the next few 6 months, 12 months, when inflation's at record highs and, you know, you've got interest rates rising, and suddenly you go, hang on a second, how can I afford this unless you're getting a decent sized pay rise?
Yeah, the banks, when they lend money, they put a bit of a buffer in place, but the trouble will arise when the borrower's circumstances change. So if there's dual income and they go down to one income.
Yeah.
Or if there's a separation, that's when there's going to be some real pain.
Yeah. So when a lot of the people that I'm speaking to at the moment are like, even I've been talking to a few first homeowners or first home buyers, potentially looking and things like that. So what would be your outlook for them? Like, is now a good time to buy? Should they hold off? What are you thinking?
Yeah, it's one of the hardest things to do in real estate is to time the market. So it's more about time in the market than time in the market. So
I love that. That's a buy good quality assets, hold them for the long time.
Yeah, it sounds like we're preaching from the same book. I think what would be best for first home buyers at the moment is to do their research, go to as many homes as possible as they can, and understand the type of property they're trying to buy, understand what it's selling for, what it's selling for in their area, and the demand for that particular type of property. They need to be getting strategic advice from a mortgage broker who understands that the changing market. And my advice is to buy when the banks and your strategic mortgage broker tell you it's the right time to buy for your borrowing capacity. Because if you can borrow, say, $1.5 million now, if circumstances change, interest rates rise, serviceability measures change, you might be only able to borrow 1.2 or 1.3 in 12 or 18 months.
Yeah, so do you want to run listeners through like why the rising interest rates means they can borrow less?
So I'm not qualified to talk about the financial markets in terms of like rising rates, but my understanding is I think it's when rates rise, obviously the cost of money becomes more expensive. So your repayments per month are going to increase. So it's going to bring borrowing capacities down. Therefore, if you're trying to time the market and wait for prices to come down and your borrowing capacity comes down at the same time, it's a double-edged sword. You're better off buying when you can afford to buy.
Yeah. Yeah. That's like essentially, yeah, you might be able to, a house might drop to 1.2, but your borrowing capacity might drop to 1.1. So then you're kind of left out of there as well.
And then you're looking at a completely different asset class. So in some suburbs, $1 million as opposed to 1.2, if you can only borrow $1 million, you'd be looking at a townhouse. As opposed to 1.2, you could potentially get a house that needs some work. I much prefer houses over townhouses from a capital growth perspective. Townhouses typically from a functionality perspective might be younger, warmer in winter, cooler in summer, lower maintenance. But from growth, if you're after growth in the residential property market, you need to be focusing on the fundamentals, location, land size, and the ability to add value.
So we spoke a little bit about types of assets just then. So are there certain assets that you think will be more affected than others in this down market?
Yeah, we've already seen the properties that need renovating or the properties that are highly intrinsically made up of land value, those houses are struggling the most because buyers are fearful.
Worried about like fixing them up and what that costs or...
Well, getting a trade now, the cost of that trade, the cost of the services, the supplies, the restrictions around getting goods into the country, it's made everything a lot more onerous and more difficult for buyers. I've got experience on renovating two homes and I'm looking to buy my third in the next 6 to 12 months. And what I renovated my last home for, which was around 40,000, 45,000, I'd be looking to budget around between 70 and 80 for the same renovation. Yeah, two years later.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. So what else, what other assets do you think will be then will do well in times like this? Or is there other assets that you haven't mentioned that you think you'd probably steer clear of at the moment?
Steer clear of. I would suggest high density apartments. Yep. I wouldn't be looking at those anytime soon. If you're buying an apartment, you really, I like to use the 80-20 rule. 80% are fairly average, 20% are worth investing your time in. So yeah, I'd be focusing on blue chip suburbs that are affordable, highly intrinsic owner occupier appeal, so that when you hold that asset for a long period of time, the next person that buys it is hopefully an owner-occupier, because it's proven that owner-occupiers come auction day will stretch more than an investor.
Yeah. And what other comments do you have in terms of like asset classes or different types of properties and how they're going to be impacted in these times?
High-end recently built contemporary properties are selling quite well still, especially Bayside and Inner East. The Mornington Peninsula market has come off a little bit. I like, for first home buyers, if they want to be in that inner middle ring, I'd be looking at villa units. I think villa units are really good growth prospects because they've got land that underpins the value. Typically, they're lower density, so you might find a villa unit with 3, 4, 6, 8 on the block. So you don't have as many neighbours to worry about when you have your annual body corporate meeting.
Yep. what else is there at the moment?
I think one of the best assets that anyone listening to the podcast can buy is a older residential home in a really good area that has the ability to be subdivided. I like the idea of renovating the front home, living in the front home for a period of time, watching that land grow in the backyard while you're having your cup of tea in the kitchen, over many years that is.
Yep.
And then when the time's right, when you can borrow again, you either knock down both homes and build two brand new homes, or you build one brand new home at the back. And the advantage there is you can either sell the front home to fund the back one, and then you've got a brand new home, or you can keep the front one, turn that into an investment and move into the back one. And you do avoid capital gains tax under that structure. You can't do that multiple times over because the ATO will cotton on that you're doing it for profit. But yeah, that's what I'll be doing.
And we've spoken a little bit about areas and we've mentioned that. So what, I guess for the listeners out there, what makes a good area for a property? Like what do you look for and what are the, you mentioned fundamentals before, like so run us through maybe a little bit about your thoughts process around the fundamentals of property investing.
Historically speaking, the closer to the CBD, the better.
Yeah. Has the peninsula bucked that trend a little bit or?
Oh, it certainly has, but I see the peninsula market coming back a little bit more over the next couple of years, giving back more of the gains that it has seen. So yeah, lifestyle drivers like proximity to amenities, cafes, schools, transport, parks, gardens, open spaces. Schools are one of the big ones that I've been kind of working with a lot of clients lately, is when they come to me, they're looking to either upsize the home or buy an investment property, and they're all talking about school zones, which is important because the cost of private school is $25,000 to $35,000 a year. Not everyone can afford that. So if you can get your child and set up their future into a really good public school, like the Beaumaris or McKinnon schools, then you're doing well.
Yeah. And is there other things in terms of area? So you mentioned proximity to the city used to be what you look for. Is that still what you're looking for at the moment in times like these?
Yeah, I like to revert back to what's historically proven good. But again, if you can find, like with the peninsula, if you come across the right type of property that I mentioned earlier, that you can add value, it's got good land component, and you can subdivide it, I'd be certainly open to the peninsula.
Yeah, very good. So you also offer a service on the selling side as well. So do you want to talk us through a little bit about that?
Yeah, 6 years as an auctioneer and sales agent have certainly given me some insight to how the back end and how the sales agents work. So it's a vendor advisory service. It's a free service. It's a bit like a mortgage broker. They get paid by the bank. We get paid by the sales agent. We interview two or three local expert agents. We only work with the best agents. We sit down, we strategically go through the method of sale, the timing, the marketing, the preparation of the home, the communication strategies, and we hold our client's hand to make sure that they're feeling really comfortable. There was a client of yours that we helped in Canterbury, and they hadn't sold a home for like close to 40 years.
Yeah, and I think this is like the important thing for listeners to realize is like you don't buy and sell property overly often. Like as a normal person out there, maybe once every 10 years, if that, that's quite, you know, a frequent turnover. Some people might be more. A lot of people are a lot less. So it's something that you do all day, every day. And that's why it's important to get guidance, because it's likely going to be one of your biggest, if not your biggest, financial asset that you're dealing with.
One of the biggest mistakes I see sellers make is they'll choose the cheapest agent because they think cheap is going to save the money, but the cheapest agent will actually cost the money. So the good agents will charge a fair fee and they will be negotiable. But if you interview three or four agents and you go with the agent that's offering it at the lowest rate, chances are they're doing that because they don't have much other business. And another mistake I see sellers see is they underinvest in the marketing and advertising of their property. So you need to understand where the dollars are going, and you need to strategically place the dollars in the right places. So the number one important place for when selling your home and where the marketing spend should be going is to the digital side of things. So realestate.com, you need to be on page one at the very top, and the same as domain, you need to be on page one at the very top. If you go with a cheap agent, chances are they'll probably put you on page two or three just as a standard ad, and you get lost. So you're behind the eight ball straight away.
Yeah, and it's the same thing we mentioned on here on the podcast. Like, what, you don't go to the cheapest hairdresser? Well, I don't. You might. Some people might out there, but it's you usually get what you pay for in a lot of these instances.
If you want a buzz cut, you can go to a $10 job, but my hairdresser charges $60. Put his prices up because of inflation.
Well, that's... That's it. It's like you get what you pay for a lot of the time. So when you're dealing with an asset as big as a property, you want to make sure that you're making the right decision. Is there anything else that we haven't mentioned that you'd want to touch on in these times?
Some tips for buyers. I think it's really important if you're going to the property and you're doing it alone, you need to find out the motivation of the seller. So some of the common motivations are death, if someone's passed away in the family, divorce, obviously a separation, financial loss, financial gain, upsizing to a larger home, or they might, the person might be downsizing to a smaller home. Sometimes they might be relocating for work. It could be a tree or a sea change. So fundamentally understanding why the seller is selling will give you a big advantage in the negotiation. Another really important tip is to, like I said earlier, talk about, understand the days on market. There's a property we purchased in May this year. It was first listed in February at 5.5 to 5.9 million. It had a price reduction just before we came along to 5.2 to 5.5 million. So it was 400,000 range at the top end, then it was down to a $300,000 range. Our first offer with an advertised price of 5.2 to 5.5 was actually 4.7 million. That was my first offer.
Yep.
We subsequently negotiated terms and conditions and we brought the property for 4.9. That's $1 million below that first range.
Or is it like in the, like maybe, you know, in COVID times, it's going for $1 million over or something like that? Or?
That poor seller, if they had of, when I say poor seller, they still made quite a good profit. Yeah. That seller, if they had of been on the market 6 or 9 months earlier, they, chances are they would have got a much higher price. But in saying that, I looked at the data. They only paid $2.5 million for the property just before COVID. They spent $1 million on it. So they still walked away with nice quite profit. A good profit. But yep. My clients didn't have to spend the top end of what they were quoting, which was a great outcome.
Yeah. Is there any other tips or things that you'd like to mention before we wrap up today's episode?
Be mindful that if you are lucky enough to have a really good budget to buy an A-grade asset, even in a soft market, chances are an A-grade asset in a soft market will still be under competition. So if the fundamentals are strong, example, the location, the land-to-building ratio, the architectural appeal, the floor plan, the orientation, the natural light, if you're ticking all those boxes, even in a soft market, those types of properties will be selling under competition, especially if it's online. So make sure you don't get too cute with the negotiations on really good properties because you might shoot yourself in the foot and someone else will beat you to the punch.
Yeah, very, very good. So you're really good on social media and you've got a lot of tips and tricks for the listeners. So what's the best way for listeners out there if they want to get in touch with you or follow you?
Yeah, LinkedIn, Andrew Date or Andrew Industry Insider Date on LinkedIn. My business page is Industry Insider Property Advocates. Also on Instagram, Andrew Date 1. And Instagram, our company page is Melbourne Buyer Agents.
Yeah, and I'll post all the links to that in the show notes as well. Well, thank you for coming on today, Andrew, and giving us all that invaluable insight.
Pleasure, Zach. Thank you.